Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, the rising star. What does Adam Chera have to do? Sydney v West Coast. We revisit one of the great rivalries and Freo. Can they break their duck on the road?
That was out of bounds.
I don't believe it. I see it, but I don't believe it.
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now.
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant. Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. Thursday, and that means it's the second edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast. I have with me in the studio Glenn Quatermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times newspaper. I am Mark Duffield, the senior football writer of the West Australian newspaper.
Looking mischievous, Duff, today.
We are brought to you by Tab Touch. As my Irish mate Jerry Tidd used to say, ooh, Quarters,
yes,
it's 3:30 in Perth on a Thursday. And we have some Thursday night footy to look forward to.
Oh, we do, which I enjoy. I enjoy Thursday night footy. We've had this conversation before. I like my Thursday. I don't know why. It's just bring it on earlier.
Is it because it's one of those nights where, remember when you were young and Thursday night was a time where you took the opportunity to play up knowing you only had to get through Friday before the weekend?
Well, it's every night for me, mate.
There is a bit of free airtime on Thursday, isn't there, while you're waiting for the weekend's events?
There is. I do like my Thursday night footy. I'm not sure about tonight's game, though, how competitive it will be. I'm intrigued by the Rising Star Award, Duff. Nothing against Brennan Cox, who had a fantastic game last week and deserves his nomination, but I'm intrigued why Chera and Brayshaw haven't been nominated to this point.
So Adam Chera gets 5 votes from both the coaches in the AFL Coaches Association Award, which means basically unanimous best on ground, according to the coaches. I certainly gave him my best on ground, although I must admit I did have Brennan Cox alongside Lachie Neal as Fremantle's second best player, and that was the way the coaches saw it as well. They had those two level pegging as the second best.
Body of work, Chera and Brayshaw certainly deserve to be nominated.
So you give me the philosophical ideal, and I'll tell you why it is.
Well, I just think that obviously rounds one, early rounds, you can't nominate on a body of work. But I think it should be more when you get to the mid stage of the year. Body of work and then another breakout game, I think you should deserve a nomination. I think Chera certainly deserves to be. I'd have Doty, for me, would be leading the Rising Star at this point. I just think he's, assuming the mantle there was a big void there with the departure of Lever. Footy's been down there a bit this year too, so I just think he's been terrific. Stevenson's another at Collingwood. He's been terrific this year. But certainly they're in the conversation, Chera and Brayshaw.
So if you did a 1-2-3 right now, and you're saying Doty 1.
I'm saying Doty 1, I'm saying Chera 2, and I'd put Stevenson in.
I'd say Doty, Stevenson, Chera. They'd be my 1-2-3. Yep. So you're right. Why haven't they been nominated? Well, the answer is simple. The AFL and the Rising Star sponsor want publicity every week.
Yeah.
And so the way to get publicity every week is to nominate a player from every week. A bit surprised that Chera didn't edge Cox for the nomination on the weekend. You know, the other issue I have with the Rising Star Award, you're not comparing apples with apples. So it's either a best first year player award or it's not. And the answer is it's not.
Yeah. You were very strong last year on Power Pepper, weren't you? Not winning it.
Yeah. I just think, you know, a first-year player competing against a second-year player. I mean, we even see, take Chera, Brayshaw and Bailey Banfield at Fremantle and take Jake Waterman, Willie Rioli, Liam Ryan at West Coast. Now, they're all supposedly eligible, but they're all at very different stages of their lives and their careers. So Jake Waterman is, at the end of the day, a second-year player. The fact that he didn't play last year, he still got to do all the training. His body got to develop 12 months more. Bailey Banfield played at Claremont, so he wasn't in an AFL system, but he still got to have that 12 months development, 12 months of extra maturity as a person and as a footballer. Stevenson, Chera, Brayshaw, and a few others are all first-year players, fresh out of school, fresh into playing against men. I think that makes whatever they achieve more meritorious than a person who has had that extra time.
Doty's been around the system too, hasn't he, for a while?
Yeah, Doty's.
A couple of years.
I think Doty's been on their list for a year or two. It was interesting. I went through the nominees' quarters, and A, I did their numbers. I should have brought them around with me, actually, because they're back at my desk. A, I did their numbers, and B, I looked at their ages. I think Stevenson and there's one other are the only teenagers that have been nominated so far. All the rest are 20. So if you take people like Chera and Brayshaw, who are either 18 or 19, that means that, again, they're not competing on an even playing field.
Still plenty of time. Still half a season to go. And I've got a feeling, Chera particularly, I think he won't be short of awards by the end of his footy career.
Well, and Chera now, you'd have to think after the weekend, is one good game away from being from being nominated. Because what they do try and do at the back half of the year, and at sometimes it gets a bit farcical with this award, is that they look for, okay, who has earned a nomination? And therefore, who do we
better
need
get
to
him,
be?
We better get him in before the season runs out.
So maybe, Quarters, the way to do this is to have 25 nominees. So there's 22 rounds of the season, or 23 rounds of the season, have 25 nominees, and at the end of the year, the AFL nominates two based on body of work, so that we don't have a player missing out. So let's say Chera doesn't play great footy between now and the end of the year. Surely, on the body of work he's produced as a first-year player,
a nomination.
So far, he deserves a nomination. And Brayshaw too, I would argue, as well. Different strokes for different folks there.
Yep.
Port versus the Western Bulldogs. Told Aaron Norton is re-signing with the Bulldogs as of today, so the young Peel Funder defender will be staying put, which is good news for the Bulldogs. He's a very promising young player.
Yeah, started the season really well. He was probably finding it tough now, as you do in your first year. But I think, that's well done to the young fella. The Jackson Trengove Cup, this one.
The Jackson Trengove Cup. And that would be the Jackson Trengove that's played for both clubs, not the Jackson Trengove that it's one club.
That's right, exactly. So, Thursday night footy, as suggested, looking forward to it. But Port should win this one pretty comfortably. Dogs coming off the bye, Port off a six-day break. I think there's a lot of there's a lot missing from that Western Bulldogs side, and I think this will be about a 30-point win to Port.
Okay, so there's always an explanation for why clubs are going the way they're going, even though we often...
Not always.
No, I think there is. It's a case of looking for it and finding the right one. So what is the explanation for the Bulldogs being in the state they're in just 2 years on from a premiership? When they won the flag, they didn't look to have an incredibly old list.
No, it's the question often begged about finishing seventh that year. How good was their year? Did they just play the best footy for that month of the year? I think it's the truth somewhere in the middle. I don't think they had an outstanding year, but they were as good a team as I've seen in September for those 4 weeks that I've seen for many years. Did players get ahead of themselves? Probably a few of them did, I think. There seems to be, it looks like an unsettled list. An unsettled list. So I'm not sure how Beveridge addresses that. I'm sure he's doing his best. We've seen him recently question players publicly.
Yep.
Roughhead, one of them, who's out this week.
I wonder.
Which is going to leave them short again, because coming up against Paddy Ryder tonight, that's an area of the game that they'll really struggle in tonight.
So Jordan Roughhead not playing this week. What do you do if you're Jordan Roughhead at the end of the year?
Well, what you do this week is you go back to the VFL and you work your butt off and work your way back into the side. Well, you probably look elsewhere. I think if the coach flags you publicly, I think it's a bit of an out.
Yeah.
And I think he would see that, and I would be very surprised if he wasn't looking around already.
So if you're Luke Beveridge then, put on your Bachelor of Psychology hat here, what's he trying to do here? Because you're right, he's publicly questioned a few. It put him offside with Jake Stringer at the end of last year.
He's done the same with Mitch Wallace too, and Mitch Wallace is back in this week.
Yeah.
Really interesting move. He's a different cat, Beveridge. I'm not sure. He's obviously trying to get inside their heads and get the most out of them. He would know more than we would about their approach to training and their approach to their footy and their approach to life. So I think he's just trying to shake it out of them.
So obviously, Tommy Liberatore he's injured now. Sadly, hurt his knee early in the season, but he was the classic example of the Western Bulldogs premiership star who went into full party mode in the wake of the grand final.
It would be hard not to. I think it's such an achievement, particularly for a club such as the Western Bulldogs. Yeah. It had been such a long period between their one and only flag and their second. It would be really hard not to get swept up in the hype.
Go through that 22 that you see on their list for tonight. Who do you see that has kicked on since the 2016 Premiership?
Well, I think not too many, to be honest. I think I had a question mark over Johannesson last year, to be honest, but I think he's been pretty good this year.
I think he's been solid.
I think this year he's been pretty good. I would give him a tick this year. Well, I've looked through the team now.
Cordy?
Question mark. I think Hunter, I would say.
Hunter's been pretty solid.
I would say Hunter has. I would say
Easton Woods had injury issues, so we'll give him a little bit
Bontempelli.
Bontempelli hasn't really kicked on like we thought he might.
He's been a bit up and down. There's been a lot on his shoulders, though. I think there's a lot of pressure on Bontempelli. I'd still give him a tick for effort.
Yep.
Dalhouse, no. Boyd, certainly not. McRae, I would give a tick.
McRae's had a terrific year this year. McRae is the one.
Yeah, so he's the one who really has kicked on. But there are a lot of players who are in that almost category at the Western Bulldogs.
Yeah.
And I think that's where they're at the moment.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you there. So what do you need to see from Port Adelaide to... Because I think we weren't convinced about their premiership credentials after their win over Richmond, which probably tells you we're not going to be convinced about their premiership credentials.
Well, they're home games. They're Adelaide. I want to see them beat a big opponent and I want to see them play four quarters of footy. As you pointed out earlier in the week, they were just playing... safe football when they got in the lead.
Yeah, I didn't like the way they led last
I'd like
week.
To see them really execute an opponent over four quarters away from home, and then, for me, they'll be back in the mix. I don't see them as a top four club right now.
Maybe they're trying to play a tighter brand, and certainly we heard there was clearly a shift in what they're trying to do. Ollie Wine spoke about it after the game, that they wanted to play what he called Port Adelaide football.
Yeah.
Don't be flash, don't be expansive.
It does amuse me, that phrase.
The Port way. They need to show us the Port way.
Please. Never tear us apart.
Okay, so we're both tipping Port Adelaide to win this.
We are. Friday night at the SCG, what a big game this is. Sydney v West Coast. West Coast haven't played there a lot, but haven't won at the SCG since 1999. Sydney's form at the SCG has been a little up and down this year.
Yep.
In recent weeks, or certainly over the past month, it's been a lot better. Really looking forward to Callum Sinclair, who's really found some form this year, the Nick Nat and Lysett. Five in a row, the Swans, and of course the Eagles, we know they've won 10 in a row. So, and intriguingly, I mean, obviously round one, the only team that's beaten West Coast this year was all came down to one player, Buddy Franklin, and I'm hearing Barass is maybe not playing this weekend.
So Simo was hedging his bets a little bit at during his press conference yesterday. He was happy to clear Jared Brander in.
Yep.
He wasn't happy to clear Luke Shuey, and he was kind of a bit wishy-washy about what was happening with Will Schofield. So Will Schofield apparently has a birth of a child imminent, and they were looking at flying him. Tommy Barras, he probably wouldn't be the player they would start on Buddy after the last time anyway.
I thought he went okay in round one.
Yeah.
Sounds funny because he kicked eight, but, you know, I reckon Buddy would have kicked eight on anyone. He was just in menacing form that
night. Yeah, I don't think it was Tom's fault. No. I think the way...
Well, he was one out most of the night, so, you know...
The way Sydney were able to isolate... Yeah. No one wants to be in the situation Tom Barras was in round one, which is one-on-one on Buddy inside attacking 50. That's like a lamb to the slaughter for any defender in the AFL.
Yep. I'm picking Sydney, Duff. Thought long and hard about this game. It was hard to pick against West Coast, but I think they're due, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And, it wouldn't be a cross against their name if they lost this one. It'll be a great game, Sydney, for me.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm going with the home team, and it's only because it's being played at the SCG. I know they've got some issues at home this year, but the different dimensions of the ground, to me, quarters at a completely different They require a completely different style of play. I think the Eagles are very much in the groove at the moment, and if they were to win this, they're going to have to absolutely guts it out. And that I just get the feeling that if it comes down to a guts it out game, that Sydney on their home deck in front of their home crowd might just have enough petrol tickets.
They'll try and make it an arm wrestle. That's what they do at the SCG, and they'll try and get it on their terms. And
of course, Jared Brander playing West Coast seventh debutant for the year, which is a good effort by a club that's going as well as they are to have seven players playing their first game.
And big raps on this kid too. Is the first player taken in the draft?
Yeah, so pick 13 overall. About 2 months before the draft, this kid was touted as top five. And then he was one of those kids who slid. And it wasn't because the recruiters didn't see things in him that they liked. They just didn't see them often enough. So that's going to be the key. He's got most of the tools, this kid. He's a good size, 195. He moves well. He makes smart positions. And he's got good skills. So that's a fair chunk of the toolbox you need to succeed in the AFL. But I think recruiters would have liked to have seen him play well more often as an 18.
It shows a lot of the Eagles' faith in him debuting at the SCG against Sydney.
Yeah, and maybe it means that Tommy Barris isn't playing because, one tall out already, Jack Darling, as we know. It may be that they're having to have a little bit of a reshuffle of their tall stocks. And incidentally, Brander can play at either end of the ground, so he would give them a defensive option if he did play.
On to Saturday in Etihad Stadium. Now, this is a game where I oscillated, picked one, and now I've settled on the other.
You oscillated?
Carlton v Fremantle. Well, I was going back and forth, Carlton, Frio.
Isn't oscillating going round and round?
Well, yeah, okay. Well, I was going round and round in circles. Frio have a good record against Carlton, won four of their last five, although Carlton's form in recent years not great. I'm picking Frio, despite their very ugly form on the road. I am picking Frio over Carlton. Fife and Sandy's return probably got me over the line there.
Well, we're assuming they'll play.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly Fife plays. He plays his 150th game. Sandy, we're told he passed his cognitive state test after that concussion, which has kept him out for two games.
It's been best part of 3 weeks.
Must have been a good one.
Yeah.
I'll be tipping Fremantle. If you're going to overcome bleak away form, Etihad Stadium's not a bad place to do it.
And Carlton's not a bad opponent to do it against.
That's right. Pristine conditions, nice, hard surface. It should be firm. It should be dry. Really, there's no excuse to not play decent footy at Etihad Stadium.
44 games without kicking 100 points, Carlton. Now, I know you're not going to have to kick 100 points to win this game, but I think it's indicative of their form and their struggle in attack.
And I guess the question for Fremantle is, without Michael Walters, can they kick 100 points? And also, without Alex Pearce at the other end, can they contain the likes of Charlie Curnow? Because that will be their big challenge. This is probably going to be an 80-70 game, isn't it?
Who are you picking?
I'm going to go for Fremantle. Not with any super confidence. It's hard to be confident about a team that's lost everything on the road this year. But I think that there's not much to recommend Carlton. And I think if you're going to try and break your duck on the road, I think Etihad Stadium's a good place to try and do it.
Metricon on Saturday, the Struggle Cup, Gold Coast v St Kilda.
Is the first prize a block of flats in Collingwood?
Yeah, that's right. Averaging 45 points since round 8, Gold Coast. It's become a real embarrassing run for them. St Kilda, this is a great opportunity. They don't want to lose this. They do not want to lose this. I'm picking the Saints. I think their depth should enable them to win this game.
Yeah, I agree. St Kilda were really poor last week. The week before, they were 7 points adrift of West Coast. They probably only played 1.5, 2 quarters in that game. And there were probably times in that game where they weren't great either. But St Kilda is playing some good footy.
Yeah, they're okay after quarter time. Mm. I mean, obviously they had that 9-1 opening quarter against Sydney last week, and then they were okay after that. So I'm sort of looking at my tip on that, on the strength of that. Although having said that, they were pretty good in the last quarter against the Eagles too the week before. So
we're not seeing 4 quarters of good footy from St Kilda. We're not seeing anything from Gold Coast, and that's
nothing
problem
at all.
What happens if St Kilda loses this? We know that, you know, Stuart Dew's in his first year at Gold Coast, so...
He's fine. Well, Alan Richardson won't be sacked. He's got 2 years left on his contract. It'll smash this off cap. They can't afford to pay him out. He will continue coaching.
Okay, so put this one to you then. Are there some losses, though, even though the person keeps coaching, are there some losses you just don't
recover from? Well, this is one of them. This is one of them. Yep. I think it's a hypothetical because I think they'll win this reasonably comfortably.
Okay, I'm going to tip St Kilda as well. I'm not quite as bullish about it as you. Maybe I have a little more faith in Gold Coast. Maybe I think that at some point Gold Coast has to return to that footy we saw them play some of earlier in the season.
Fascinating last week, Jack Billings. Went back to the VFL, played for Sandringham against Frankston, got 54 possessions. The Frankston coach is a development coach at St Kilda.
Yeah.
So... what's the message that goes out to his players with Jack Billings? Oh, it's really fascinating.
They only tag one, Frankston, and right. David Armitage ran around and had 41, and he was the one with the tag.
Yeah, right. Okay, they only tag one, right? Okay.
If they hadn't tagged Armitage, he might have got 65. Do you know Mark Bairstow, when he was taking his year off from Geelong, played against my home club, West Arthur, and had 68 possessions
for late grace. Was
late
it?
Grace. Yeah, 68 possessions and kicked 4 goals.
Not a bad haul.
It's a fair
I saw a bit of Toby. I was riding footy for the Geelong Advertiser, and I saw a bit of Toby, a terrific footballer.
Hawthorn versus Adelaide at the MCG, 5:25 p.m. on Saturday quarters.
I'm reasonably confident the Hawks will win this. They are very gettable, Hawthorn, this year. Adelaide's struggling. I think the weight of numbers has got them. And as we've been discussing, we're getting sort of to a tipping point now with Adelaide. Look, they're capable of winning this game. Because, as I said, Hawthorn's gettable. We're getting to a stage now. They've lost three in a row. A couple more losses and you'd almost park the bus. And just, look, let's rehab our really good players. Let's give them a rest and let's just focus on next year. They're almost at that point, I reckon, Adelaide.
So what do you read into all the speculation about, you know, this pre-season cult-like behaviour keeps on rearing its head?
Yeah.
The talks of fractures in the camp.
Well, this is an injury situation, though.
Yeah.
Half the team's missing. 9 of the 22 from the grand final have been missing. So,
and some of the ones that are playing have had interrupted preparations.
You were talking earlier, there are reasons, and this is a definite reason. Yep. There may be some merit in these training camps, but, I mean, it's not the first time players have had gobbledygook put into their heads, is it? I mean, this training camp where they dropped off in the bush and all sorts of stuff was happening.
I think they were blindfolded and made to listen repeatedly to the Richmond...
No, well, it's tough. So what? They're not in the Gallipoli trenches.
I'm just wondering how that makes you kick mark and handball.
They're not even eating live chickens, are they? They're a big deal.
Seriously, if
you can't cope, with that. Mind you, I was a bit sick of that song.
What's the difference between a fetish and a perversion?
What is it, mate?
If you've got a fetish, you use a feather.
That's right.
If you've got a perversion, you use the whole chook.
Right. By the way, the Hawks match up pretty well against, moving on from that way, the Hawks match up pretty well. 1-8 of their last 9 against the Crows. So it's a good record, and we can't talk about this game without mentioning 350 to Silk.
Silk Burgoyne.
Where do you rate him, mate?
If you look at the great Indigenous players of all time, we talk about Farmer, we talk about Cable, I think we now also talk about Franklin and Burgoyne.
Yeah, and I'd put McLeod in there
and
too.
And McLeod's probably
I'd put
in
him
that
in there as well. And I think Burgoyne's definitely in that mix.
Yeah.
Big occasion player.
Probably Goods as well. Goods probably fits. If you wanted a big six.
Yeah, Goods, yeah.
That's probably it.
And I think that he will, I think he's got less than 20 games to catch up with Goods in terms of the most games played by an Indigenous player. And I reckon he'll play on next year, Burgoyne. So I reckon that's very gettable, that milestone. Really interesting when you listen to all the players, the greats who've played with Burgoyne over those premierships, and they all talk about his ability to go into the guts, go into the centre.
And change the game.
And he just does it repeatedly. And you look at his big games over the years and that's that was a factor in all of them. He went into the middle and changed the momentum of the game.
You know, long ago, in a different life, playing at Port Adelaide with Brendan Lade in the ruck, I remember West Coast going there, and this was when West Coast were right at the height of their powers with Judd, Cousins, Kerr, and Lade and Burgoyne basically did to West Coast, what West Coast had been doing to other teams with Cox and Judd.
Mm.
He absolutely scunned them at clearance and just dominated the game. West Coast got cleaned up. And I remember writing at the time, West Coast now knows how other teams feel trying to cope with Chris Judd, because Sean Burgoyne basically Chris Judded them. He's super player, super balanced, doesn't fall over. He's got a super balance to his game also of inside and outside. So you mentioned his ability to go in and win stoppage and change the course of games. But also, would there be a cleaner finisher in the game?
No.
And that's why they call him Silk. He is absolute top-end talent.
And
Port Adelaide must look back at that one and go, there must be a bit of teeth gnashing going on.
The old knee injury, yeah. he's washed up. He's no good.
He may not play again.
Your tip?
I'm going to tip Hawthorn. I just think too much has gone wrong for too long at Adelaide. I'm not putting a great lot of stock in the pre-season camp cult. I just think that too many absent, too many who are present injured and banged up. And I think Adelaide will do very, very well if they somehow scramble into the bottom end of the eight.
Just a couple of questions before we get on to the last game. We've got Judd from Kareen asks, Adam Chera's decision-making stood out on Sunday, which begs the question, are Fremantle players having their natural instinct coached out of them by having to adhere to strict game plans? Why was Fremantle's best decision-maker on Sunday one of their least experienced players?
Probably the role he was allowed to play, and probably the fact that he's a first-year player means that he doesn't get shut down in that role.
So he's playing off the halfback flank last
week. Plays off halfback. Now, if Stephen Hill is playing that role and gets a few early touches, they'll be doing something about Stephen Hill.
Yeah.
Because they just don't want him, you know, making decisions and carving them up.
Won't be too long before they start doing something about
absolutely.
Adam Chera, too.
Yeah, that's an attention grabber, that game from Chera. Yeah. So if he produces one or two more games like that in that position, when he runs back there, they won't be looking at Luke Ryan or Nathan Wilson. They'll be looking at Adam Chera as the
and
guy.
And that's when you become a bona fide AFL player, when you show some ability and there's an attempt to shut you down and you rise above that.
It's not really fair when that happens in your first season.
No, it's not, but it probably won't. It probably won't. There are other fish to fry in that team, but good question. Judd from Kareen. MCG on Sunday, Geelong v Richmond. Everyone thinks Richmond's gettable in this. Your thoughts?
So I think both teams are gettable in this. I like Geelong's form.
Yeah.
And I'm a lot more convinced about Geelong than I was 3 or 4 weeks ago. But I go back to the final last year played at the MCG where Richmond got them with the crummers. So Geelong has a tall, powerful defence. Great kudos to them for shifting Mark Blitzavs back into the tall defence.
Which has them thereabouts with some of the great defences of recent times. I think they're conceding an average of about 58 a game. Terrific Geelong in defence.
Yeah.
What I like about them is Ablett's found some form. Dangerfield goes forward. I like Dangerfield forward. I do like the look of him at the moment, Geelong.
What happens if Richmond's army of crummers, if Jack Riewoldt gets the ball on the deck and the crummers get to go to work against the taller Geelong defenders, what happens then?
Well, they're in a bit of trouble. I'm picking Richmond. I can't not pick Richmond at the MCG at the moment. I do hark back. We talked about that final last year. That was an end of 13 straight to Geelong too.
Yeah.
So they do match up pretty well, but I can't pick against Richmond in this game. I cannot pick against them at the MCG.
No, I'm the same. This is a venue tip. Richmond, there'll be a big crowd there. There'll be 60 or 70,000 there. That'll get Richmond's players up. I think Richmond's got a challenging month quarters. Mm-hmm. I reckon this month sorts Richmond out because the novelty of being the reigning premier, not being hung over, pushing into the fresh season, that's worn off now. We're in the trudge.
Yeah, it's a hard slog of winter.
You've really got to be motivated to get, and this is often the period that claims the reigning premier.
There's a lot of energy about the team, though. Let's just forget the Adelaide game last week. They're not travelling well, Richmond, but they don't have to win the premiership at the Adelaide Oval. There's a lot of energy still about that Richmond side.
Yeah, so I'm going to tip Richmond, but this is going to be close. And this, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, about five of these games, I wouldn't be overly surprised if it goes the other way.
So you've with same tips this week, which disappoints me in a way because you're closing in. You're one off me now in the West Australian tipping panel. So you're breathing down my neck.
I'm very sheepish about getting the Fremantle tip.
Last. Yeah, same. Yeah, I look, as I said, I had Carlton, and I've changed my tip, so you know what that means.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. Good luck with Thursday night football. Good luck with Friday night football if you're a West Coast or Sydney fan. Of course, the great traditional rivals of the Noughties. Good luck if you're a Fremantle fan and you're hoping to see them break their duck on the road this weekend. We'll be back on Tuesday for a full wrap of the round and the consequences that the round has held for various teams. Thank you for joining us this morning for Tab Touch.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.